Jared and the GM live at Bridgestone Arena, Preds and Penguins tonight. And you know what? My heart is so hurt from the Belmont loss that the Preds need to go out there and win big tonight. Like a real butt kicking, so tomorrow we'll feel a little bit better. Tonight we'll feel a little bit better. The Vols are going to win big tomorrow, so you ain't got to worry about that. And P.J. Washington's out for Kentucky, but I highly doubt they'll have a problem with Abilene Christian and the one coach, or the coach who has one suit.
With a hole in the pants.
And apparently, and Abilene, we don't have any tailors out there to go get our suits fixed, so we only got one pants. I'm thinking Cal probably has an entire closet full of suits. I mean, Cal probably has 5,000 suits that are all $5,000 more than the suit that he's got, the one suit. So they ought to win that game. And anywho, that's where we are. But the Belmont loss was just heartbreaking as they lost to Maryland. Again, not second-guessing Rick Birdie's a great coach, an all-time great in this city. But, dude, call timeout. Or don't hold at the end of the shot. So with that, it's time for Ask the GM. On the line, a pair of tickets to see Kiss at April 9th at Bridgestone Arena, 615-737-1025. One line open, but Ian, let's hit it.
When the GM speaks,
a little bit of the personality.
Everybody listens.
They understand every situation.
And we're giving you exclusive access to Pick the Brain of former Titans GM Floyd Reese.
Brought to you by Pella Windows of Nashville.
Call 615-737-1025 now.
You're never going to make a mistake.
This is Ask the GM.
Jared and the GM, Ask the GM, presented by Pella Windows of Nashville. Everything on the table, including the Belmont game. And Sean is going to start us on the Belmont game. Thank you for calling. Go ahead, Sean.
Lloyd, we all know that it's very rare, if not ever, that any caller agrees with Jared, especially on his opinion of coaching and management decisions in sports. But I will have to give him credit. I got to agree with Jared. In this situation, Rick Bird blew that game, in my opinion. You know, they had the ball there with 20, 30 seconds to go, and they ran the clock. If anything, Jared was right. They should have just taken it to the hoop and drawn a foul. If not, you got to call a timeout, set up a good play. Rick Bird didn't do it. And for that matter, I agree with Jared. But then, Floyd, I want to ask you, in situations in which you're the GM and you have a coach that makes a bad decision that costs his team a game, how would you handle addressing the coach and the team?
You know, I always felt like, especially when it came to things like timeouts and what to do, you know, what kind of play to call on a two-point play and, you know, those kinds of things, that they were all coaching decisions. And in my mind, as long as they had thought it through, as long as they had practiced it enough, and as long as they had a reason for calling it, for doing what they're doing, then I thought it was hard for me, being that I didn't have a say in it. It was hard for me to second guess them. So most of the time, I didn't get into it. Now, we had a situation one time at the end of a game where we had a chance to win a game and it didn't work out, and I was not happy about that because that was a blunder.
Tell them what happened.
No, but those things generally don't happen. You know, I think especially in the NFL, those guys spend so much time, so many meetings, going over. You know, okay, there are 21 seconds. You've got two timeouts. You're behind by three. What are you gonna? Those kinds of things, just day after day, week after week. Generally speaking, they're pretty well thought out. Now, do they always work? No, they don't always work. But it's not because you haven't planned it or tried it or practiced it.
The one thing I'll say to your point about this is, you know, Rick Bird had a reason. Like, I probably am not going to agree with the reason that he'll give at the podium, or that he's probably giving at the podium right now, for why he wanted to run out the clock, why he didn't want to take a timeout. Rick Bird probably has a reason. And if I had to guess, I would say it's this. He probably didn't want to go to overtime with Maryland. He probably wanted to win the game right there. a la Vrabel going for two, we're going to win it right here kind of thing. He probably felt so confident in that play, which basically what it was a ball screen where all the action's on the left side so that you basically distract everybody on the right side and then you get a wide open back cut. They did it against Temple the other night. They did that exact same thing and it resulted in a beautiful backdoor cut for a layup. Now that was out of a timeout, which is, this obviously was not out of a timeout, but that was, he probably felt that they were going to execute the play and did not want to give Maryland the ability to adjust to that play. So that's probably going to be his explanation. You know as well as anybody, Rick Byrd was thinking the exact same things that we're thinking as the game was going down. They got the ball with about 20 seconds, and Rick's probably thinking, do I call it? Do I let him play? Do I? And you probably, as a coach, are prepared for that situation to where you say, if we get in this situation, we will not call timeout, or we will run, you know, whatever you want to, cutters, if you call a play cutters. We'll run cutters on this play if we get in that situation. So you know he has an explanation for that. And if the backdoor cut works and the guy's wide open at the basket and lays it up with 1 second left, Rick Byrd's a genius, which is the tough part of it.
Right.
But I still disagree with the decision at the end. Let's go to Sturgill, who's up next on Ask the GM, presented by Pella Windows of Nashville. Sturgill, you're on with the GM, Floyd Reese.
Hey, guys. I'm just sick to my stomach watching that loss today. I just thought those kids had it. And I just feel like it's worse because all the national guys were picking them to win. And, Floyd, I just got to ask, what would you tell those kids in the locker room after the game? I'll hang up and listen.
Thanks, Sturgill.
You know what? You've got to be as positive as you can be. I mean, this is – you know, from a record standpoint, this is, I shouldn't say record, from an accomplishment standpoint, this is probably the best team in Belmont history. So, you know, you're talking about a group of guys, and you know, in that locker room, I mean, I understand the young men, but there are some tears being shed in that locker room, because I've been in those locker rooms and I've shed those tears. So, I mean, there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on. I mean, these guys played their hearts out. They are a really, really fine team. They're well coached. I mean, it's a great program, a program that they'll be proud of, not only this year, but for the rest of their lives. They'll be able to look back and, you know, stick their chest out a little bit.
It's so tough. The thing about this tournament is, and everybody knows watching it, the range of emotions. Even like being with a women's team that's been through games like this, both good and bad, it's so tough. It's so tough. I mean, I've never smoked a cigarette in my life, and I never will. But you know that feeling when someone like pulls out a cigarette, like when you win a game like that, you exhale like so deep because you're like, oh my God, I can't believe we just won that game. And then it's like, oh, my God, we better plan a trip. We're going out to Spokane now to go to the Sweet 16. And then there's another side. We played Maryland, funny enough, same team, my senior year, and lost a heartbreaker that we should have won just like this. And I remember that locker room after the game. It was kind of like, that's it? Like, it's over? And that's when you get to that point, that's the tough part, is when you're sitting there like, we had it, and it's over, and it's tough. And that's the worst part. And everybody's feeling it in the locker room. And sometimes the coach is not feeling it. You know, sometimes the coach is, hey, really proud of the season, really proud of the – and you're like, man, that's – obviously that's how a coach works or whatever. But let's go to Ron, who's up next here on Ask the GM. Ron, you're on with GM Floyd Reese.
Thanks, Jared, for the kiss of death on that game right there. GM, my question to you is about firing coaches. Does the GM – have any authority in hiring and firing of assistant coaches? And what goes through the process of firing a head coach in season or after season? Is that all on the GM, or do you have to consult the president or the owners also? Thanks, guys. I'll take it off the air.
You bet. There, generally speaking, it's all determined by how the organization is put together. If the head coach is in charge of his assistants hiring and firing, and contracts and whatever else for his assistants, then the GM will generally recommend to the head coach what he thinks he ought to do. And then it's kind of up to the head coach. If it's not that way, if everything goes through the head coach, then he will still, I mean, everything goes through the GM, then he will go to the head coach and he will say, hey, this is what I'm thinking about doing. What do you think? And you'll discuss through it and come up with something. You know, there's very few times would you ever want to fire an assistant when the head coach didn't want to. Now, it does happen, but it's very few times. When it comes to the head coach, I think it depends on, I mean, it's like you've heard us talk about teams and when do you give up on a team or a player and when do you fall in love with a player. And it's kind of the same thing with a coach. I think when you have a head coach and once you get to the point where you can, you know, look at yourself in the mirror and you can say, you know what, he is not good enough. You know, he can't get me where I want to go, then you need to make the change. Now, the advantage, if there is, to making a change during the season is you get to see the interim head coach go through meetings, go through practice, do the things that he needs to do to be a head coach, and it gives you a chance to evaluate those things. And that's, you know, the advantage there. The disadvantage, of course, is it's, you know, total disruption. I mean, it's, you can imagine what it does to the team and to the other coaches. Now everybody is literally fighting for their job. They know that the chances of them being here next year, you know, just got cut by about 80%. Tough.
That's gonna be a tough spot to live in. You know, it's, you got kids hardest, in school.
Hardest I ever coached. Ever coached. Was when you got fired, when your head coach got fired during the season, and you were coaching, and you know you could have been the best coach in the NFL, and still gotten fired at the end of the year. You know, those kind of situations, really, really almost unbearable.
Oh goodness! More of your calls, including the Belmont game. 615-737-1025 is the number. 615-737-1025. Speaking of the OVC, Murray State has a nice little lead on Marquette, 49-35, with 17 minutes to go in the game. That's got to hurt your heart more right now if you're a Belmont fan, right?
Probably.
That your conference rival is kind of comfortable right now, though it's only 11 because Marquette just hit a three. But that your conference rival is comfortable in their game after losing the heartbreaker that Belmont lost. 615-737-1025. More Ask the GM presented by Pella Windows of Nashville. By the way, get used to that guy, Floyd. That's Ja Morant. Get used to that guy right there. It's ESPN 1025 The Game and streaming on the Game Nashville app. Ask the GM is presented by Pella Windows of Nashville. This is a special Ask the GM, though, because we're talking about the Belmont heartbreaking loss to Maryland. Murray State is up 15 in the second half on Marquette. If you're a Belmont fan, does that make you feel better or worse?
It probably doesn't help much. I mean, there's your team that beat you to win the championship that's in pretty good shape.
Okay, I want you to put yourself in the shoes of Scott Corley, the athletic director, and then we'll get back to the calls in a second. I want you to put yourself in the shoes of Scott Corley, the athletic director at Belmont. You just had the most successful season maybe in the history of the school, won an NCAA tournament game, and Rick Byrd is a living legend. And I think he played for Rick Byrd. After the game's over, do you go up to him and say, hey, coach, why didn't you call timeout at the end? Why'd you hold for the last shot? Why'd you? Or with his stature, do you just kind of leave it alone and just, good game, coach?
Yeah, I mean, you probably give him an extension.
No, I'm not saying they should fire him or anything like that. I mean, Rick, my guess is Rick Byrd has a lifetime contract, and I'm sure both sides are happy with that agreement. But I'm talking about, like, what's the conversation like? You are technically Rick Byrd's boss, and we want to know, Rick, why didn't you call timeout or why didn't you just go for the bucket?
Yeah, I don't. I have no clue, but I would doubt that. I mean, if it was me, I know I wouldn't. You know, I don't think. Again, if you're not in those meetings, and if you haven't voiced an opinion, and if you haven't tried to sway it your way, if you have, if you've done all that, then you don't have a say. You know, you may not like it, but that's all it is. You not liking it. Because, you know, you haven't had to make that call, make that decision. And it's not, you know, it's the reasons that you do things like that at the end of a game, in my opinion, are widely varied and depend on, you know, who the coach is, who your players are, who you're playing, how they're playing, what the score. I mean, just so many things.
Like, do you think there's probably a chance that my explanation of why – Rick Bird, you know, my explanation of why he didn't call timeout, why he held for the last shot, that may not even be why he didn't call timeout. You know, that may not be why he held for the last shot. I mean, he may have a totally different other reason. I understand, you know, whether or not you criticize the coach or how you feel about something like that. It just, for me, I don't know.
Well, again, in my opinion, it's always, you know, the understanding. I mean, the scenario you laid out, how many times do you think Rick Bird has thought about that scenario?
Oh, a billion.
A billion times. He's been through it. He's probably tried it. He's probably done it. And that may have been, you know, his next best move. Who knows? But, I mean, those guys spend so much time on those. He's been through that 100 times. And he made that decision. And in my mind, you know, with somebody that's had the success that he's had, you kind of, okay, coach, you know, good luck next year. We'll get better. What do you need? You know, let's hit recruiting hard. I mean, this will have to be great for recruiting. Not the end of this game I'm talking about, but just this season.
Well, it's funny that somebody posted on Twitter the backdoor cut that Belmont ran. They ran it at the end of the half against UCLA earlier this year. I talked about how they ran it out of a timeout against Temple. I wonder if Rick Bird didn't want to give Maryland's coaches the opportunity to prepare them for the backdoor cut. Rick Bird says after the game that if it wasn't for one deflection, they'd be playing on Saturday. And he's right. I mean, if it wasn't for a lot of things, they'd be playing on Saturday. But just a tough loss for Belmont. I feel like Belmont always did. I remember the Duke game. I was in the Cayman Islands, the Duke game in 2008, where you felt the exact same way after the game, like, oh, you had it. Now, this is different because Maryland's a 6 seed and Duke was a 2 seed, but you still have that, oh, you had it. Oh, you had it.
And the sad part is you worked so hard for so long to get to that point in time, you know. And you heard me talk about, you know, if you add up the number of man hours and practices and games and meetings and whatever else involved, just to get to that point. And if it works, of course, you're elated, you're genius, everything's great. If it doesn't work, then, you know, there's going to be people asking why.
Back to your calls again. Ask the GM, presented by Pella Windows of Nashville. Marshall is up next here on Jared and the GM. Marshall, you're on with the GM, Floyd Reese.
Hey, guys, got a question for Floyd. We know in the NHL that you know, the teams that seem to do well in the playoffs are the ones that seem to be doing hot leading into the playoffs. Do you see that in the NFL the same way, or with fewer games, is it more important to be better, have the better record throughout the entire season?
Yeah, good question, Marshall. You know what? Every game is vital in the NFL because, as you put it, there's only 16. So every game's important. That being said, when you look at, you know, the team that I would call the most successful of any, which is New England, when it gets to November, everybody in that organization changes gear a little bit. Everything kind of picks up a little bit. The practices pick up. The meetings are a little bit longer. The practices are a little bit longer. Everybody lifts weights a little bit longer because they know that what they do in November and December is going to have a giant effect on what happens in the playoffs. So they start cranking it up. That's why when New England, you know, they'll go out and they'll lose the second game of the year to somebody and not play well and get beaten soundly. You know, they just kind of, they don't blow it off. I mean, there's going to be a lot of work to get to be done. But the whole program is set up so that as you're going along, you're getting better. You know, it's not the first day you of practice during a new season. That's not the best you're going to be, you know. And I think they make a point of telling the players and preaching to the players that, hey, we're now in November. Now we have to start really improving. Here's where we need to improve. Here's how we improve it. And they do a really good job of selling that.
Let's take more of your phone. 615-737-1025 is the phone number. 615-737-1025. Again, Belmont losers to Maryland today in the NCAA tournament in heartbreaking fashion. Murray State, meanwhile, I don't want to say they're all over Marquette, but they are all over Marquette. 60-42, Ja Morant. I don't know if you can improve your stock any better than he has, but his stock, I mean, hey, if he's single-handedly going to beat Marquette, then you have to feel good about it. I feel like if they played a seven-game series between Belmont and Maryland, I think Belmont wins. I think Belmont's better team. I think Belmont's better coached. They just didn't get it done today, especially coming out of the second half when they had a six-point lead. If that six-point lead goes to 10 instead of immediately evaporating, that's a total, you know, that's the
It was a tale of almost two halves, because at the beginning of the game, Belmont was the one hitting the threes, you know, and Maryland was just hitting the twos. And so that was kind of the difference in the game. And I don't know what the biggest lead was they had all day long, but it was sizable. You know, it had to be 9, 10, 11 points. So you think, okay, you're in pretty good shape, and then they whittle it back down. And then in the second half, Maryland came out and started hitting the threes. And in my mind, that's where it really changed. Because I think they, you know, now they had it all going. They had the ability to get inside if they wanted to. They had the ability to hit the threes. And now it's tough. You got to do a lot of things to win that game.
Predators, Penguins tonight. The Predators have won three in a row, two straight against good teams. Are you going on NHL Network? What are you doing? Hey. Are you going on NHL Network? You going to join us?
For a couple minutes.
Okay, Adam Vingan from The Athletic will join us coming up next here on the show. So we'll get to that as we get you ready for the Predators and the Penguins. You know, Adam, I'm so glad that he'll be able to fit us in his schedule, because he's got the NHL Network coming up, and I'm just so honored and I'm so thankful for him. And his great article today on The Athletic, you should read it as well. Hey, let me tell you about Hiller. I'm thankful for them, too. Over 15,000 online reviews. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electric. Over 15,000 online reviews, and they have a 4.8 out of 5-star rating. That's right. They have true transparency pricing. They have free second opinions. They are the best, and that's why I'm so glad I use Hiller on my home. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Again, I've read some of the on-air, some of the responses people have had. If somebody's going to write a review, they're going to write a review. They're going to take the time out of their day to write a review because they either had a great experience or they had a terrible experience. Nowhere in the middle. Well, that's why Hiller's got over 15,000 reviews with a 4.8 star out of 5 rating. That's how good they are. That's why I love them. That's why I use them. That's Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, Electrical. Adam Vingan next, Jared and the GM. It's ESPN 1025 The Game. Adam, by the way, will be on the pregame show as well, so get excited for that. It's Jared and the GM on ESPN 1025 The Game. Preds and Penguins tonight. Pregame coverage at 6. Adam Vingan from The Athletic. He'll be on the pregame coverage. He'll also be on NHL Network in a second, although we ask you to not turn to that too. Watch us instead. Adam, interesting article in The Athletic today about the possible playoff opponents. It's either Dallas or St. Louis, as you write. You have great analysis, but you don't have a who would you rather the Preds play in the first round. So let me ask you that before we get to the Penguins. Who is the better bet for the Predators, St. Louis or Dallas?
Well, maybe I wasn't explicit in saying one or the other, but
You know, I feel like the Blues series would be more of a toss-up, while the Stars series, in my opinion, would play out similarly to how the Avalanche series played out last year, where I think it would be a lot more competitive than maybe people would anticipate it to be. But you know, the Blues have come back down to earth. The Stars are playing better hockey as of late, so that there's the argument for playing the team that's coming in hot versus the team that's slowing down. But you know, I really do think the Blues and the Predators are pretty evenly matched. I do think that the Predators have a depth advantage over the Stars outside of Tyler Seguin and Jamie Benn and Alex Radulov and Matt Zuccarello, who should be healthy for that series. I think the Predators are a much better team at forward. I really think it would require the Stars goaltenders, either Ben Bishop or Anton Khudobin, to steal that series for them to defeat the Predators. So I think the better matchup is the Stars, but I don't think it's going to be easy one way or the other.
How big is tonight's game against Pittsburgh?
I think it's rather significant. I mean, it's weird that this is the first time these two teams are facing each other this season. The Penguins are doing what they typically do, playing well down the stretch after a midseason lull where people wonder if this is the end of the Penguins dynasty or whatever you want to call it as we know it. But going back to what you were talking about recently, Jared, you know, this week starting with the San Jose game, I think was going to tell me a lot of things. San Jose, Toronto, Pittsburgh, and Winnipeg, to see where this team really is. And they've passed the first two tests. If they can win tonight, and especially Saturday, if they can win these next two games, like I posited on Twitter recently, I would eat crow from my take last week that this team just doesn't have it. But I need to see them play like that tonight and again Saturday before I'm convinced otherwise.
We've seen Lavi adjust the lines, kind of settle down the last couple of games, especially the second line. Do you expect him to keep it that way, or is it going to be the continued mumbo-jumbo we've seen?
I would like him to continue what it is, because you're not going to develop chemistry by constantly moving guys around the lineup. We know the first line is intact. That he doesn't have to worry about. I think the Yarncroak, Sisson, and Smith line is a solid third line. The one thing that I would personally like to see is I would like to see Kyle Turris at least have a shot with Mikael Granlund and Wayne Simmonds. You know, I talked to Kyle last week in San Jose. He wasn't thrilled. He talked yesterday. He wasn't thrilled. You know, I'm not really getting the sense that it's a tenable situation right now with Kyle Turris. He does not seem quite happy with his lot in life. Playing on the fourth line, of course, his play probably deserves that spot, but you're not going to win in the playoffs with Kyle Turris playing in a fourth-line capacity and not contributing offensively. So I would like to see Peter Laviolette at least give Kyle Turris one more chance to find his rhythm in a top-six capacity. And if it doesn't work, then so be it. But I would like to see him at least get one more shot before the playoffs.
Are you worried about his attitude at all?
Well, I was surprised by how blunt he was when I spoke to him in San Jose, because Kyle's a pretty optimistic individual, the glass half full, you know, looking on the bright side of life kind of guy. So when he was pretty, you know, succinct with, no, this is not a situation that I can view in any way positively, I was a little bit shocked by that. And he spoke to the media yesterday and again said similar things. So, you know, like I said, I think it's a conversation that needs to be had in the offseason, whether or not his tenure in Nashville is worth that extra 5 years on his contract, but there's nothing they can do about it now. So you kind of have to kick that can down the road.
Can you make it to the off season without it affecting what's going on now?
I think so. I mean, he is a professional. I think he'll continue to play as best he can. But, you know, I really do think, as I said before, that he needs to have at least one more chance to show that he can contribute in a top six capacity again. And if he fails to do so and you want to bury him in the bottom six, I think you've given him enough opportunities. But I would like to see in these last eight games one more chance for him to get that opportunity.
Adam Vingan from The Athletic, last one for you before we get you out of here. How important, not just is tonight's game, but how important is it that the Predators keep what they've got in terms of effort going? Because it certainly looks like a different team since Anaheim.
Yeah, absolutely. And I asked Ryan Ellis after the game the other night if that loss in Anaheim was a turning point, and he didn't say that loss specifically, but just the month before, just the 500 play, the up and down. He said that we were a 500 team and we don't feel like we're a 500 team. He even mentioned that they had a quote-unquote little meeting, and I think it may have been after the Anaheim game, but though he didn't clarify. And since then, they're 3-0. They beat a Kings team they should have. A solid game against San Jose. A great defensive performance, minus some second period woes against the Maple Leafs. And now they're playing a Penguins team that's looking to win the Metro. So I think the effort and the urgency is there, too. I feel like this team actually, you know, I feel the urgency on the ice. I feel that compete level, which is an awful term that hockey coaches and hockey GMs and players always use. But I can sense it. I sense this team is trying harder, which sounds silly, but just the eye test seems to show over the last couple games that that really is the case.
Adam Dingen, we will see you on the pregame show tonight at 6 o'clock with Darren McFarland.
All right, I'll be back in 23 minutes, guys.
We'll see you. Adam Dingen.
Thanks, Adam.
From The Athletic. Floyd, couple takeaways there. Number one, after talking to Adam, are you worried about Kyle Turris and about maybe his attitude about his diminished role?
I think I would be worried. And I know Adam, you know, he's a professional, and he's right about that. That being said, when you have a player that is not happy, he's different, you know. He's mopey. He's maybe doesn't practice quite the way you want him to practice, and if he's not practicing with the top six or top, you know, and you're playing like a scout team, well, maybe he doesn't like that. And there's just a number of things that become a problem. And then if there's, God forbid, somebody else in the locker room, I have no idea who it would be, that is kind of feeling the same way. That is, you know, yeah, you know, Lavi doesn't like me either, and all I do is work.
Now
my
you got
butt
the anti-coach.
Now you got another guy in there, and I mean, I would try some way somehow, or have my coach try to get control of that pretty quickly.
I mean, that sounds like to me, it sounds like a giant red flag that everybody's kind of hinting at, right? Like, no one wants to come out, and I don't have you know the knowledge. When you're not on the team, you're not on the team. I'm not on the team.
Right.
And so I don't know if he's a distraction for the rest of the guys. I don't know if he's a bad teammate. But if it just feels like the little pickings that we've been getting from Adam, from his quote in the Athletic, from what he said to the media yesterday, from Laviolette's initial comments, to what David Poyle said on the midday show yesterday, it kind of feels like there's a disconnect between him and the coach. And when something like that, even the hint of a disconnect, becomes public information, that's a red flag to me. Because you never want something like that to get out, and yet they're just open and honest about it. So maybe they're just willing to say, hey, we're going to be open and honest about everything. Kyle doesn't agree with us. We see it this way. He sees it that way. But I never like those things, even when you don't agree with the coach or the GM. I don't like that to become public fodder or public discussion or something like that. Because what it tells me is if it becomes public at all, then it's 100 times worse usually inside privately than it is on the public surface. And that's a concern for sure.
Probably right.
And you heard what Adam said there about, you know, he thinks that Kyle Turris should get a second chance in a top six environment, which I'm not disagreeing with, but I mean, I kind of am, but I mean, if a guy's going to mope in the corner all day, you're going to reward him by giving him another chance? Does that send the message of the other guys?
Yeah.
Hey, cry and complain all you want, and then they'll promote you too.
Well, I think that's what I was talking about before. I think that has to be handled exactly right, which is, you know, it has to be, okay, we've decided to give you another chance on the second line, but you have got to practice and play harder than you have in your entire life, you know, that kind of thing, so that it looks like it's worth it. Because if it doesn't, then you're just wasting time.
This is a lot easier in the NFL, isn't it, when the contract isn't guaranteed, you should cut him at the end of the year.
Well, except he's a good player, you know. I mean, you don't want to cut a good
I know,
player
but sometimes good players don't.
Yeah, sometimes.
It's like what
Look
you said.
Look at Pittsburgh.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said about when you cut a guy, you can't play for this team for whatever reason. You can't play for this team right now. And Turris is not producing, and I'm okay with him not producing, even though we all know that I'm not. I'm not going to get worked up about that, but if he's becoming a distraction to the team, then that gives me a huge reservation, and that goes back to the point that you always make. about how much easier it is to acquire a guy when you've been around him, when you got an assistant coach that was his minor league coach or a scout who was assistant GM in Ottawa when you drafted him, and that guy can vouch for him here. And I'm not sure if the Predators have anybody. It's like Wayne Simmonds. Laviolette knows Wayne Simmonds as well as any other coach in the league. So there's no thought as to any reason as to why they wouldn't look at Wayne Simmonds and say, hey, yeah, he can come right in here and fit in. You know, when you give a guy a $36 million contract sight unseen, maybe you run into this a little bit. You know, it's a concern for sure.
And that's where they are.
What did you think of what Adam said about the importance of tonight's game, about how they had their little come to team meeting after the Anaheim game and they've been playing well since
then? Haven't we had a couple of those little meetings?
But this one seemed to work, maybe.
Yeah, I think those meetings don't give me much, you know, inspiration. If you got to have meetings after you just had a meeting, then I would say the first one didn't work. So I'm skeptical about this one.
So what do you think got into him? If it wasn't the team meeting, what do you think's gotten into him in the last couple of games?
Well, I don't know. I hope it's getting ready for the playoffs. I mean, that's been the plan all along, right?
I guess.
You get to a point in time, and then you start getting ready for the playoffs, and you kind of notch it up a little bit. I think that's, you know, in my mind, that's what they're doing. They're notching it up a little bit.
Do you agree with Adam that Kyle Turris deserves one more chance in a top six capacity?
I don't know. You know, the hard part about that situation is in the back of your mind, you're saying, you know what? If I just kind of chill, this might blow over and something. It's only going to fester. It's only going to get worse in my mind. So it's something that you need to get decided. And it needs to, you know, he needs to understand it. You need to understand it. The other players need to understand it. Whatever that is, however that turns out. Because if it's not, then it can get, you know, infected.
Jared and the GM live from Bridgestone Arena. Predators game day is next. As the Preds get set to take on the Penguins, it's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Live from the Game Nashville studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. Mount Juliet. It's game day in Smashville, brought to you by the Nexus Group and TJ Anderson Homes. What are Peter Laviolette's keys to the game? Who will be in and out of the lineup? It's time to break it all down on Jared and the GM on your flagship home of Smashville.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Predators Game Day brought to you by the Nexus Group. They're your trusted provider and safe haven for business networking, offering secure, reliable connectivity. Call the Nexus Group 615-221-4200 and do not get catfished, Big Daddy.
Unless it's on the ice.
Bingo, Preds and Penguins tonight. How about these records of these two teams as they get set to take battle? The Nashville Predators come in at 42-27-5. That's good for 89 points. Pittsburgh, you ask, how many points do they have? They have 89, although it's a different 89. 39-24-11. So the Penguins have been doing less in overtime, but same amount of points at 89 in tonight's game. We remember this is a Stanley Cup final rematch from 2 years ago as these two teams took each other on. Pittsburgh winning in 6 games. This is their first matchup this season. It's time now for the Coach's Take, presented by TJ Anderson Homes. Your road to real estate begins at tjandersonhomes.com. And we start with Peter Laviolette on playing this team that's won 2 of the last 3 Cups.
First and foremost, we prepare for a really good team. This team has been good for years. They've got great players, and they're in a situation just like we are where they're trying to push to see whether or not they can get some home ice, trying to solidify their playoff spot. And they have lost a couple games, which probably adds to it. But even if they had won their last game and had not lost in the extra session, I still think that we're playing a good team and we need to be ready. So every time we played Pittsburgh, they've been pretty good battles.
Floyd, again, the Coach's Take presented by TJ Anderson Homes. Buy or sell your home at tjandersonhomes.com. Floyd, you know the desperation level of Pittsburgh, the compete level of Pittsburgh is going to be high tonight. How important early is it going to be that the Preds match it from what you see off the jump tonight?
Well, I think we've seen, especially in the last couple of games, how important it is for the Preds to start fast and score early. You know, the for them to get the first goal right off the bat, I think especially at home, is going to be critical. And they seem to only build from that. When the other team scores first for whatever reason, it kind of puts them on their heels and it gets much, much tougher.
We take a look at the injury report. Again, the Predators are pretty healthy. Mika Salamaki, Zach Rinaldo, Dan Hamhuis all on IR. Although the question is going to be about what lineup changes are made, so on and so forth. We do have a true goalie matchup tonight, though, as you get Pekka versus Matt Murray. So there's no guarantee that the second matchup will have Matt Murray. There's no second guarantee the second matchup will have Pekka. But Pekka tonight against Matt Murray means that UC Soros probably goes on Saturday night against the Winnipeg Jets. Taking a look at the standings, this is very important. The Nashville Predators are not dead even by any means with St. Louis, but there are a couple wins here or there from it being kind of fishy. The Predators have 8 games to play. The Blues, meanwhile, have 9, and the Predators have a 5-point lead on St. Louis. What does that mean? That means if you give the Blues their 1 game in hand and add 2 points to it, the Predators really have a 3-point lead on the Blues. That's 2 games, one way or another, that could swing it in favor of St. Louis. Also, the Predators are 3 points behind the Winnipeg Jets. A win tonight, Winnipeg just keeps on winning. They beat Anaheim last night. A win tonight would put you 1 point behind the Jets, albeit still with games in hand, but that would then give you your opportunity with your trip to Winnipeg coming up on Saturday night.
And the opposite of that is not very appealing. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't get your points tonight, then you go to Winnipeg and don't get your points there. Now I think it's pretty well settled. You know, the best you can hope for is to finish second.
I don't think we should lump these 2 games together, this game and the game on Saturday, because they're both so different from one another. But the next 2 games could decide whether or not you're fighting with St. Louis for home ice in the first round, or whether or not you're fighting with Winnipeg for the division.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's that close, you know, because you're talking about, what, 8 points separating 3 teams, mm-hmm. you know, and you're in the middle. So you're kind of getting attacked from both sides.
And you kind of have to wonder if Peter may go with Pekka tonight and Pekka on Saturday night at Winnipeg because he wants the 4 points so badly. Mm,
maybe, and then rest him the last few.
Well, remember that they play Monday against Minnesota. And Soros has played well against Minnesota, especially at Minnesota.
Right.
So if you go Pekka, Pekka, Soros, then you have the whole week off until Friday when you would have a matchup at Pittsburgh and you could come back with Pekka Rinne. Tonight, 7 o'clock, right here, ESPN 102.5, the game. Floyd Reese, what are we watching for tonight between the Preds and the Penguins?
You know, I mean, we've talked about how important it is to keep the streak going against playoff-caliber teams. I think that's going to be big. For me, I think the fast start is really going to be key tonight. I mean, we have got to find a way to get out of the blocks and some way, somehow, score that first point and then let the game play out from there. But we need to get on the board first.
I think tonight, you can't have one of those sleepwalk games. Gotta have, even if you lose, it's got to be a dogfight that you lose. It can't be one of those sleepwalk games where you're feeling good, bang, 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 3-0, because that can't be one of those kind of games. Cannot sleep. I don't want to go into tomorrow's show feeling like the Predators left anything on the table. So tonight they've got to go out there. They have to take it from Pittsburgh and not necessarily win, although I want, you know, you want them to win, but just really go out there and give us the A-plus effort that we know they're capable of. Floyd, that's going to do it for us. We're out of here tomorrow. We're out of here. We're back tomorrow at 2 o'clock. The Predators play all kinds of NCAA tournament action going on. Murray State, by the way, going to knock off Marquette handedly as they're up by 19 with 55 seconds to go. That's it for us. Darren McFarland is next with the pregame. Adam Vingan will join him. Puck drop is at 7. We will see you tomorrow at 2.